Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this week's episode continues kind of on our theme of 2022, Craig, and that's undiscovered Florida, uncovering Florida, lost Florida in some circumstances, and we're talking about lost communities today, and it really got me thinking about Florida's rural character, small town character, something increasingly being eroded that a lot of people really are not aware how rural and small town this state is when you think about Orlando and Disney and South Beach and Miami and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. People think Florida, they think, you know, beaches, theme parks, and they don't really think about the other stuff. But there's an awful lot of Florida. Once you get off the interstates, get off I-75, get off I-95, get off I-4, and go see places that are, you know, maybe just a little tiny dot on the map. I mean, the other day I was driving up to Gainesville and decided on a whim to get off of I-75 and take 301, pass through this little town called Citra that has a little roadside orange juice place that you can pull in and get fresh picked oranges, and they have their own grove. And that's part of the Florida experience too.
Oh man. Yeah. The roadside fruit stand, the roadside orange juice place, the roadside boiled peanut shop up here in North Florida. Was there a better road in America for doing that than A1A through all the beach towns at one point? Now, again, that's Jacksonville now and Daytona. So it's not the way it was, but
But in the panhandle, if you took 30A, that would take you for all the little beach towns in the panhandle.
Yeah.
And great places for oysters and places like that. Yeah. So,
and I think so much of your writing in the Florida Phoenix and the book and everything else is about protecting this aspect of Florida. You know, I like to tell people, you know, there's a place for Miami Beach, but there's also a place for Fernandina Beach, and that's where I live. And Fernandina Beach is losing that character, that rural small town charm by the day. So I'm talking about Fernandina Beach 20 years ago, long before I ever got here. And the rural farming, cattle, roadside attractions, small town side of Florida is just being gobbled up by the development and the toll roads and the high rises. And you know, so much of your work is to raise awareness that, you know, Florida's this part too. You know, it's not just about the beaches and the theme parks and the high rises.
You mentioned about the toll roads. I mean, every time they've talked about building the Northern Turnpike extension or one of the, the roads to nowhere, people in rural parts of Florida say, stop, we don't want you to come in and change the character of our community. Yeah. We like it the way it is. We like living in a rural area. Levy County, for instance, formally voted to say, stop, don't put any new roads through.
And I'm all for growth and development when it's smart and when it's managed. But
when it's planned,
A 1,000 new people can't move to Florida every day and all get a 2,500 square foot freestanding home with a pool, driveway and a yard. You know, there's just not enough room for that. And the state parks, the national parks, the Florida Wildlife Corridor, this is the part of the greatness of Florida as well. And boy, is it under attack. And if, you know, and I say, if we aren't careful, we haven't been careful. A tremendous amount of it has already been lost, but it remains worth fighting for. And we will talk about lost communities in rural and small town Florida today. But first, want to mention the podcast, as always, sponsored by the good folks at Visit Sarasota, visitsarasota.com. The folks at visitsarasota.com are sharing on their Instagram account, Visit Sarasota County, Mixon Fruit Farms. And this is known as Florida's sweetest attraction, 13 miles from downtown Sarasota, 80 years in business. It's got the fruit grove, like we were talking about, where you can buy the citrus right off the tree, but also Florida wine and homemade fudge and a wildlife care and education center where they take in injured animals and then the ones that can't be rehabilitated and sent back into the wild. Animal kids are allowed to touch them and they use them for demonstrations and things of that nature. So if that interests you, Florida's Sweetest Attraction can be found online at mixin.com, on social media at Mixin Farms, on Instagram, Facebook, same place. And again, we want to thank Visit Sarasota for sponsoring the podcast. And now we welcome in our guests, both of whom work at the Smathers Library at the University of Florida. Hank Young is the principal cataloger. Bridget Bim-Manuel is the collections coordinator for Florida History. They recently wrapped up an exhibition at UF regarding Florida's lost communities, communities that once were and no longer exist. How did you come across their work, Craig?
Well, I have a friend who works at the library, and I was asking him, you know, what are some cool things that you guys are doing that maybe we could highlight on the podcast? And he said, oh my God, you've got to know about this one. This is right up your alley. And he was right.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about Florida's lost communities with Hank and Bridget.
Hank, Bridget, thanks so much for joining us today. Let me start off by, I guess, defining our terms. What do we mean when we say lost communities? I mean, are they, did someone misplace them, or are they in lost and found, or what?
Yeah, that is a very excellent question. And one of the problems that we've had is that these terms are not really defined very well. Yeah. And we talk about ghost towns and people think of the Wild West. The ghost town is actually just a town that's past its prime. And there's, you know, a lot of infrastructure. There are a lot of buildings. There aren't as many people. And so you have a lot of empty buildings, for instance. And these are ghost towns. And Detroit is considered to be a ghost town. And there's still tons of people there. It's just that there's also a whole lot of empty factory buildings. So that's one of the problems that we have. But mostly, when we first started this project, I came up with the definition, there ain't no there there.
That sounds highly technical.
I would drive out to these places. There's a photograph I love to use. It's me standing in downtown Louise, Florida. And if you saw it, you wouldn't see Louise, Florida. You'd see a picture of me standing by the road in front of a bunch of trees. Because Louise is gone. It's just not there anymore. And so there's really nothing to see.
Right. And there are a lot of places in Florida that are no longer there. There are some that are in the process of fading. And sometimes it's hard to determine what part of its life cycle it's in. There's some places that are gone completely. There's no physical trace left. There's others that are greatly in decline. So, for example, a city that was once incorporated, which is now no longer incorporated. But people may still live there and may have a sense of community. It's just not what it was. And then there's those other places that are on their way to that. You know, there may be a sign on the road, you know, has a name of this place. And people might live there, but right. There's no community there. There's no stores. There's no businesses. There's no church, no school.
There could have also been a large community at one time, but then a nearby town started growing. And they kind of ate the other town. And so now it's just like a section or
a neighborhood.
And people who live there may not even know about it.
Right. There's a lot of neighborhoods in Gainesville that were once not Gainesville that now are. Mm-hmm. So defining terms for this project has been exceedingly difficult.
Yeah. How many did you feature in the exhibit? How many lost communities did you find?
Now, how many we found and how many we featured are two different questions. But the exhibit, let's see, we had Yamato, we had...
Oh, I'm going to say we had about a dozen. Well, maybe 20.
We had that many, but we also had, a large map for one of the defunct railroads. And the whole purpose of showing that map was that a lot of places sprang up along railroad lines. And since the railroads lost prominence and sort of disappeared, those places disappeared with them. And so we have this huge railroad map that displayed dozens and dozens of places that are no longer there.
But right. And just as the railroads sprang up, and new places appeared, old places disappeared at the same time. And of course, you'd also saw that with the interstate system.
Right.
Wow. The exact same thing happened again. So it was a nice little repeat of history there.
All typical.
What was the largest of the communities to become lost?
That's another good question. That's the thing about these communities as well. Some of them, like I said, were incorporated towns, and some of them only ever had about 50, 60 people living there, but they were still a community with a name.
Right. The former county seat of Alachua County, where we live, was Noonansville. And basically, there was one railroad that was built a little bit too far east for people in Noonansville to really use to get to work. So you had a lot of people moved away, and then they built another one too far west. And at the same time, the town of Alachua sprang up. And so pretty much most of the people who lived in Noonansville moved to Alachua. And Noonansville is now gone.
Well, and they also moved the courthouse from Noonansville to Gainesville, which was on the railroad line, which didn't help. But
and that was just kind of it.
So at least at that time in the 19th century, that was a fairly sizable community. Another example, which I actually know some numbers on, some of these we dealt with Ellaville, which is around the Suwannee River. They had about 1,000 people living there. It was one of the larger communities at the time. And it's completely gone. There's very little trace of it left now.
You mentioned about Yamato. I have a vague memory. Yeah. That's a kind of an odd duck among the lost communities. What was the story there?
Yes, that's a fun one. I got to take a day trip down there. It's in northern Boca Raton now, but it was a Japanese community that sprang up, basically the idea of being pineapple growers, because pineapples were a big deal for Florida at the time. And they came here and they were doing fairly well for a little while, and then they had problems with the harvest, and then there was a world war that broke out.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, you might be familiar with that. But it was one of the Florida developers, I can't remember which one, that was trying to set up this colony, and they were trying to encourage immigration from Japan, which is kind of unusual in the middle of Florida.
Well, yeah. It was before the war. So,
yeah. It was definitely before the war. It was 1910s, 1920s, it was very early in the century.
Yeah, in the 20s.
But you know, if your main crop fails, you know, it's also, I imagine, hard to adjust from being in Japan and then moving to Florida. That would be a hard adjustment to make, different climate.
They really, I love the pictures because you could really tell that they were trying to Americanize. They were learning English, wearing Western clothes, and it was still a very Japanese community, but they knew they're here now, and they were going to make their way. And unfortunately, forces were against them. One of the nice things about Yamato is that they were not subjugated to the internment camps, and actually, just basically, the local law enforcement said, we don't recommend that you stray very far from Yamato, stay in town. And they actually had quite a lot more freedom of movement than the Japanese and most of the rest of the country.
And by that time, most of them had kind of moved away from the area. There aren't very many people left. One of the most noteworthy people who remained was George Murakami.
Yes.
He was the longest term resident. He stayed there for a long time. And eventually, he made his fortune, lost his fortune, made his fortune again. And he owned a lot of acreage in Palm Beach County. And he decided, I would like to donate this land. And eventually he did find a taker for it. And now that's where the Murakami Gardens are.
Yeah, a remarkable attraction in Palm Beach County, if anyone is interested in seeing them. Totally unlike anything in Florida, obviously.
And that's the legacy of this long-ago community.
Right, you can still visit a little piece of Yamato by going to the Murakami, the beautiful gardens. And I think there's even a memorial to Murakami on the property.
And there's also a kind of stage area where there are outdoor events celebrating Japanese culture.
Yeah, I think they have tea ceremonies there pretty regularly.
Well, the day we were there, they had a drummer drumming.
Oh, nice.
And that was fun.
I was not there with him at the time. Yeah.
I went with someone else.
Because that's one of the things Hank really loves to do is get in his car or get on his motorcycle and try to visit these places if possible, just to see what's there.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's nothing.
A lot of times there's nothing. Yeah. I get there and it's like, well, okay, another picture of me standing in the middle of nowhere.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And every county in Florida has places like this.
Two, I want to ask you about Rosewood and Ocoee, at one point thriving Black communities, altered dramatically by race massacres in the early 20th century. Are they considered lost communities under your definition?
Well, Rosewood certainly is, but Ocoee's still there. So we haven't dealt with, I mean, there's still a city of Ocoee, it's still alive. Right. It's not gone, so we haven't dealt with Ocoee as much, but definitely Rosewood's in our neck of the woods. Actually, Hank went out there.
I went out there and I took pictures. There's only one house that was there at the time, and it's recently been sold to the Real Rosewood Society.
Foundation.
Okay, yeah. Foundation. And they're going to be moving it. So yeah. I got pictures of it while it was still there.
Right. They're planning to move the building. They acquired it from the person who currently who owned it. And they're planning to move it, I think, to the city of Archer. And they're planning to use it for a museum. Mm-hmm. Oh, there.
Fascinating.
Because we've had several of the folks who work at the libraries and some of the historians in the history department that have been working a little bit with, you know, the people who are trying to keep the history of Rosewood alive. So we kind of, through association, we know some of those people.
Yes.
Once they move it, though, there'll be nothing left of Rosewood except the historic marker that vandals like to shoot from time to time.
They do, because Hank, you saw the sign.
I saw the sign, and yeah, you could see where people have left little dolls and crosses and different remembrances, and it's a little shrine now.
Right, and people will pull off on the side of the road and take pictures. That's what Hank did.
That's what I did. I met a couple that the husband had heard of it and the wife hadn't, and he was bringing her out there to show her.
Yeah. Impact of the railroads coming and going, the interstate coming, crop failures, race massacres. What are some of the other reasons for which a town would have existed and then ceased to?
Citrus industry.
Citrus
and phosphate.
Well, industry in general. Right. The industry that may have supported that town might have faded away for some reason.
Because a lot of these were company towns.
Okay.
Well, particularly with phosphate. They were actually founded by phosphate companies for their needs, places for their workers to live. They're an area called Bone Valley, which is around Mulberry, Florida, in that part of the state, if you know, Southwest Florida.
Yep.
Yeah, and there was a couple. There was one called Brewster, and there was one called Pierce. And you went to
Pierce.
You went to Pierce,
I think.
Yeah, and literally, they constructed all the buildings, and it was itself going to be in these phosphate mines. But as the phosphate mines were closing, at least I can't remember which one it was. It was either Brewster or Pierce. They sold the houses. It was Pierce. They sold the houses to the people who used to live in them, and those people then moved the houses to other places. But we've been working with our map librarian. U.S. has thousands upon thousands of aerial photographs. And we were able to look at some aerial photographs of where Pierce was. And you can actually still see where the house lots were from above. Wow. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
But how important was evidence like aerials for you for finding these places? In other words, what was your, how did your detective work go?
Well, we didn't use the aerials for this. That came in later.
First, we started with maps. That's the easiest way. You look at a map, say, from 1895. It doesn't matter what year. You look at it and you say, I don't recognize the name of that place. What is that? It's not there now. And so that's kind of what starts you on the trail. And sometimes we're able to figure out what a place is. And sometimes we aren't, because if the name of the community includes the word fort or springs or something else, probably there was a geological feature that was there. But sometimes communities sprang up around them, like the place, or like I said, a military establishment.
Right.
Right. And we still have places in Florida named after these military establishments. But occasionally there was also community. And sometimes it's hard to suss out. You know, is Blue Springs, for example, is there people there? Or Fort whatever?
Or was this area just a post office?
Was there a rail station there? Because sometimes there were people that lived around the rail station, obviously, and sometimes there weren't. Or some places had names, like there's one in Alachua County called Constein's Mill. I still don't know what that was. I'm assuming there was a mill there at one point. Get back to your original question. That's usually how we start, was by looking at a map.
That and looking at records for the post offices.
Yes.
Because there used to be a lot more post offices than there are now.
Yes. It was a lot harder to get around in those days.
Right. It could take hours to go just a few miles.
Yes. And so there were many, many more small post offices to meet the needs of people who couldn't travel to a larger city. And to be able to have a post office in your community, you had to fill out an application. And this application had things like you had to draw a map.
You had to have a map. And sometimes you would have to come up with another name for the post office because that name was already taken.
Right. You had to have a name. That's the other thing. And the applications include things like township and range.
And how far is it to the nearest post office to the north, south, east, and west?
So at least with the post office application, you can kind of map where these places were. So that's another way to get at it.
Fascinating.
Two of the easiest ways.
Yeah. Did you wind up talking to people who used to live in some of these places?
It depends what the place was.
Right.
Uh-huh. Some places have been gone for so long, people. And in other cases, people have family members who remember.
And if they find out about it, they love to talk about it. And this is one of the things I love about this project. With my job especially, I don't normally get out to do a lot of research.
Hank, why don't you explain to them what a cataloger is so people can...
I'm a guy who basically, I make sure that something is findable in our catalogs, which are online, of course, now, instead of the card catalogs of my youth. And so basically, I deal with the data.
Right.
I'm a data person, normally. So that's why I love getting out from behind my computer and going to these places.
Yeah.
And that's actually a kind of that's part of how this whole project got started, because I work in the archives. I deal with, not with data, but with documents primarily. Right. And Hank and I have known each other for a long time.
We knew each other for quite a while, and we had just been talking for years about, we should write an article together.
Project.
And then we talked about it, and finally it was like, okay, we've been talking about this for a few years. Let's come up with something. And something that had crossed my desk was we had digitized a newspaper from Noonansville, the old county seat of Alachua County. And I had never heard of Noonansville.
I had heard of Noonansville. I was familiar with it.
And I was trying to figure out, where in the heck it was. And I think I went to Wikipedia, like, oh, it's not even there anymore. And of course, that affected my data. It's like, okay, it's not there. What is there now? And I'm thinking of things like that. And I just brought it up to Bridget at lunch. And that's when it was like, okay, we think we found our topic.
I think we were having Chinese that day.
I think we're at Taizana.
Maybe we were. This is how long ago this was. And so this project originally was asking the question, how do you describe in a cataloging record a place that is not there?
Because we have rules, and you're supposed to talk about where it is more than where it was.
And Hank has to tell this part of the story, because this is all Hank.
Oh, dear. I'm not sure what story.
Well, the subject headings and stuff.
Oh, with the subject headings, I'm going to try not to bore you too much, but there are rules about dealing with cities that aren't there. And basically, if the city existed after 1500, or it was in North or South America, then we don't call it an extinct city. But we would call it an extinct city if it were in Europe and it went extinct before 1500.
This either sounds like a really bad Abbott and Costello routine or like a question for the philosophy yeah, department.
Kind of like that,
it is kind of like this. And I have a meeting that I go to once a year at the Library of Congress. And I was actually talking to some of my equivalents at the Library of Congress. And you know, why is this? And it all has to do with just how easy it is for them to deal with their workflows. And I was like, well, that's not really a very good reason.
Yeah.
He's the only library in the world.
But he did. He did eventually figure out how to do it.
Yes, I figured out a way around it.
But it also led us to the question: well, how many places are there?
Because I thought,
it or how many are there that aren't there?
Yeah.
Right. I thought everything was going to be on the coast and just got wiped out by hurricanes. It had never occurred to me all of these other things that happened.
Right. And so we just started trying to figure out if we could actually, say, list them. And so that's how we've been essentially trying to list places.
And one of the smartest things we did fairly early on is we went to Bridget Spock, Jim Kuzak, who is the Florida History Librarian here mm-hmm. at UF.
And he's the curator of the P.K. Young Library. And so for anybody who does Florida history research, they come to us.
And he suggested that we just deal with Florida since statehood.
Yes, that's
right. And he suggested we just do Alachua County. And that made it manageable.
For a while.
For a while. And then we started branching out to other counties.
Yeah, because we were just curious. How many of these places are there? And in spite of myself, I sort of become an expert. And so whenever we have reference questions that come through, and they have anything to do with a place that doesn't exist, Jim just hits the forward button. He's like, you find it. I've generated more work for myself. But as we were talking about this project that we've been working on, just trying to figure some of these issues out, I said to Hank, I had one of my brainstorms. You should always be afraid when I have a brainstorm. I said, you know, we've been looking at all the data. You know, I turn up documents. He uses things like a GNIS.
Which is the government.
It's a geographic?
Geographic information. I forget what it stands for, but it's a federal, it's a database put up by the federal government.
Yeah.
Yes, it helps towns. And so I said, you know, we're turning up all this data and we occasionally find some interesting pictures. And so one way that we could represent this data is visually. We could have we could have ourselves a very nice exhibit.
Yeah.
Tell people about some of these places and show them kind of what they look like.
And it just kind of exploded from there.
Yeah, it's spun wildly out of control since. So.
As do most fun things.
We have an idea of creating our own database for Florida.
Maybe, one of these days.
And, you know, because we've gathered all this information, statistics from all these places, you know, where were they? Sometimes we even have some, you know, records, information.
So it's a thing we want to do in the future, but it's a major undertaking to create something like that.
Sure.
But also our map librarian has been talking to us, Carol McCullough, who works here at UF with us, and she's interested in this now too. We just keep pulling people into our orbit. You know, as many people as we can take in, you know, we bring them all down with us essentially. And she's just fascinated by this. And
we've never had anyone whose eyes glaze over. My undergrad degree was in chemistry and mathematics. And it's like anytime I talk to anyone about chemistry, you could just see the eyes glaze over. That's never happened when I talk about extinct cities.
Well, it's a fascinating setting. What's the most interesting or offbeat or unusual lost community that you
Koreshans.
The Koreshans are, that's probably the one of the most interesting ones.
Oh yeah, it was Cyrus Teed who said he'd be resurrected. Yes.
Yes.
He thought he was immortal.
And we've seen the pictures of him a few weeks after he died.
Yeah, ain't pretty.
It's not. But there, for those of you who don't know, I guess we should explain this. There's actually in Estero, Florida, which is around Fort Myers. Mm-hmm. This man who was originally, I think, in Chicago. He started. I wouldn't call it a cult exactly.
Yeah, I'd call it a cult. We had Lynn Milner on the show to talk about her book, The Allure of Immortality, about Cyrus T.
Yeah, that's where the pictures came from.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we have her book and we refer to it. Yeah, he established, what's the word, like a commune?
A little commune.
Yeah.
Right. little town for its people at all.
Right, and he has some very particular beliefs about the world, that the earth is a crust and the universe exists on the inside. And he believed in things like, were they into, one of the people who was in the abstinence?
They're definitely one of the abstinence groups.
Yeah. There's a problem if you have there's a problem with the utopian community and abstinence.
Yeah, it's hard to reproduce.
Exactly.
You constantly have to draw in new members. I mean, the Shakers,
were a
complete abstinence group. And I remember when I was in grad school and the last Shaker died.
Right. And so eventually they just didn't have, well, after Teed died as well, kind of fell apart and people fell away. So that's one of the oddest and one of our favorite, I think. Mm-hmm. All the places. I mean, well, we love Yamato. Yamato's interesting.
And we could talk about Noonansville all day, but I think they
get the prize. It's a little weird.
We're talking about Yamato and the Japanese farmers. Wasn't there another one where there were like a colony of Swedes who came here to work?
I think so, but I don't remember where they were.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think someone's mentioned them at some point.
Sure, now we're going to have to look this up.
I remember reading about how the
person who brought them in thought they were great workers, but of course the Swedes get here and they're like, man, this weather is terrible for us because it was so completely different.
A little different than Sweden.
Hank, you mentioned hurricanes. Were there any communities obliterated by hurricanes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, lots of them around the coast.
But some of the worst damage was actually, what hurricane was it? 26? The hurricane of 26, the one that hit Lake Okeechobee, if you're familiar with that one.
I think it was 28. I think that was 28.
28, yeah.
There were actually settlements on some islands in Lake Okeechobee.
Yes, there was actually islands in Lake Okeechobee. Well, they weren't really islands. They were more like spits of land that kind of, when the water levels went up, got separated from the main
land. There were actually people living on
them.
And
it's, what's the name? Rita and Tory Islands, I believe. Kramer, Rita, and Tory. The Okeechobee Islands. They're part of the dike now, so nobody can live there anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Army Corps of Engineers went in and basically took care of it.
Right, but you know, there were some of these smaller farming communities around the lake that just kind of, after that hurricane, they kind of disappeared.
But also the town that was the original, that place I love to go to, seafood on the coast. I'm trying to remember island on the west coast of Florida.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You've been there, and I can't remember. We're not talking about Cedar Key.
Cedar Key. Yeah.
Oh, you were talking about
the original Cedar Key.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right. Where they had to move the town. Yes.
They had to move the town literally. So the original town site was on this little, like,
there was a big mill that supplied cedar to make pencil in New York, in the pencil factory in New York.
And well, there was a hurricane. I can't remember quite which year it was. It was in the 20s. And then they finally realized, you know, this is not such a great place for us to be. So they had to pick up the whole town and move.
What little was left, because there was also a big fire.
Yeah. There was a lot of flooding from the hurricane. There wasn't much left. So.
Yeah. And there was, I know early on we found one place. It's where along the coast, they rebuilt twice. And basically each time they just moved a little further down the coast from where they had been.
Yeah.
Like, okay, the hurricane hit here and wiped us out. Let's go a few miles here and see if that makes a difference.
The sea level rise, we may be doing that again.
Well, that's part of this whole project, because people keep asking us this. Why is this important? We obviously think this is important. One of the answers we give, well, first of all, it tells us a lot about Florida history. What was Florida like?
Mm-hmm.
And how did Florida get to be what it is? And we speak a lot about the successes, places like Orlando and Miami developing and becoming major cities, but the rest of Florida is littered with dead towns. You know, they didn't survive, and they didn't survive for particular reasons that are related to the development of these bigger places. And also, towns are going to continue to die as time goes on. And one of the reasons we think is going to be because of climate change. Places are just going to disappear with sea level rise.
That, and of course, with increases of population, you're going to have the towns that keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Swallowing.
Another interesting one is that I found there's several towns on Merritt Island that they were destroyed basically when Cape Canaveral was built. And the government went in and said, we want to build a trade center here, and we're going to take over this land. And so you had several towns that died out that way.
They weren't very large. They were like fishing villages.
They were fishermen's paradises for the snowbirds.
Were you able to get up into the panhandle and find any up there?
We haven't really moved up to the panhandle yet. It's on our list. We're moving that way.
We started in Alachua County and we're
expanding outward.
You know, what kind of, County?
We've done Levy. We spoke to Gilchrist. We're working on Marion. You know, we're expanding outward. People tell us that we're not the only people who are interested in these things.
Right.
And for example, there's a fellow, his name is Joe Dunn. He calls himself a Florida trailblazer. From what I can tell, he's a graphic designer and he loves hiking and adventuring. Mm. So he goes out and he visits places that don't exist and he films them. Mm. And he shows people, he tells little stories about, oh, this place was, you know, there was a mill here or whatever, and this is what's left. He's a heritage monitoring scout with one of the Panhandle Archaeological Network or something. So he actually does site visits to kind of map what's still there.
And he has really great, great little videos on his YouTube channel.
And he actually goes really deep into the woods to find these places, actually. Hank won't go that deep into the woods.
You want to stay inside of the motorcycle.
Yeah, right. Motorcycle can't go too far into the scrub.
You don't want to get too far from it either.
No, it is really nice. So he's one example of a person who does this regularly. He has his YouTube is active.
Yeah.
And he has a website and he sells merchandise. He actually rescued a cat.
Yeah, I love the video where he found a cat that someone had probably dumped in the woods.
And he brought her home. She lives with him now. So.
And he gives updates on the cat now.
Well, yeah. Blessed.
Last one for me. Tell me about the potato capital of Florida, Hastings.
Hastings is an exhibit. That's one of our favorite places. Now, to be fair, Hastings is still there.
Yes.
And Hastings is one of those places that sort of falls into that gray area because it was an incorporated town. Was it? Yes, it was. It was an incorporated town at one point in time. And, of course, it's the potato capital of the world. There's a lot of truck farming there. It wasn't just potatoes.
Potato capital of Florida.
Yeah.
I don't think.
They might have been the potato capital of the world, so self-proclaimed.
It's next door to
Spud, then it's got to be the potato capital.
Yeah, so they grew a lot of potatoes there, but, you know, it's faded over time. They've lost their some of their market. And one of the reasons why potato growing was so successful here is because, at least at that time, you know, in the wintertime, you couldn't grow potatoes in, say, Maine. But you could grow them here. Mm-hmm. But now farming has obviously changed. There's better storage methods and things.
And Bridget's too young to remember when you couldn't get certain produce at certain times of the year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. When I was little, it was like, if it wasn't that season, you weren't buying it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't there.
And there were some other issues that caused the town to sort of fade. And they got to the point where the cost of municipal services, sewer and water, was just too expensive.
Fire department, police department.
And they had too many, and they had a lot of debt. And it was getting increasingly expensive for the people who lived there. So they actually, I think it was in 2017, they actually voted to not be a city.
Hmm. Wow.
You know, they
it was fairly recently.
Yeah, yeah, it's not long ago. And so now they're actually part of unincorporated St. John's County. So the county covers the police and the water and the sewer.
Yeah, and it's certainly there. I drove by and I took pictures of the sign.
He's been there.
Hastings.
I pass it every time I go to St. Augustine. It's still there. People still live there.
Right.
But it's not what it was.
It's on life support. It still exists, but that could change.
Right. And one of our favorite things, they actually used to have beauty pageant for Hastings.
Yes.
And they crown a potato queen every year.
And we have several pictures.
Of Miss Potato? Wow.
Yeah, those are not our photos. We don't own them. They're actually at the State Archives in Tallahassee. So if you go into Florida Memory, which is another one of our favorite places to look for things,
because
they've got great support for digitization, great stuff. But you can find photos of the potato queen.
Potato queen. And there was always a photo of the potato queen wearing a bathing suit made out of a potato sack.
Yes.
usually a photo of the potato queen lounging on top of a bed of potatoes.
She was photographed in some way with potatoes. And actually, I can't remember which one it was, but one of them died recently.
That was Susan Dean.
Are you sure it was Susan Dean? Because we looked her up because we saw her photos.
And we were actually hoping to invite her to the exhibit. She died just a few months.
It was like I think it was like 2019 or 2020, but I'm not sure if it was Susan Dean or not. Susan Dean, the potato queen, obviously. That was the lady's name, one of the ladies. We can't make this stuff up, we swear.
No?
We love it.
No.
Because, you know, most towns that had...
They've got a beauty pageant.
Supporting them.
Town had one. And,
right. Usually sure. Related to the form of agriculture that supports their industry.
Yeah, but like Wausau's got the possum queen.
Exactly, right. Or a Plant City with the strawberries. Did they have a strawberry queen?
They have strawberry queen, yes.
Yeah. I'm from Louisiana. There's a festival for everything, and it's always got a queen.
Hank Young and Bridget Bim Manuel from the Smathers Library at UF are investigating Florida's lost communities. We appreciate both of your time today and sharing what you found and continued success on this quest of discovering disappearing and disappeared Florida.
Yeah, don't let the ghost scare you off. Keep looking. So, Chad, I have to tell you, I'm sorry they haven't made it to the panhandle yet, because I was really hoping they would tell us about Two Egg. Have you heard of Two Egg?
Well, we've mentioned Two Egg because, what was it, Faye Dunaway is from there? Or who was
Faye
it?
Dunaway is, yeah, Faye okay. Dunaway is from Two Egg, yes. But
you mentioned
also,
that in the Ashley Gang episode that yes, for the Bonnie and Clyde movie.
Right, well, and also, supposedly, one of my relatives is the person who named Two Egg.
Really?
This is family lore. I don't know if it's true. There is a Pittman Creek nearby, so it's possible. And that supposedly, this is the back during a time of tremendous economic distress in the nation, that my ancestor owned the Two Egg trading post, I guess, or whatever it was called, the general store. And so, because nobody had any money, they would take things in trade, like, you know, you turn in a chicken to get a dress,
sure,
or, you know, that kind of thing. And that supposedly he commented one day, "This town's so sorry, it ain't even worth two eggs." And that's where the name came from.
Well, while we can no longer say welcome to Two Egg, we can say welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.